You may have.
All right. I would like to convene the Joint Committee on Legislative Council. About 1:01 p.m. in the afternoon. September, what is this? Not 21.
26.
26. What's this, September 21? We're in hearing room B.
It was posted on the 21st.
Oh, that's right. And I would like to open a work session on the acceptance and receipt of the 2018 report of the Oregon Sunshine Committee. So who do we hear from? What do we do with that? Who's speaking? Yes?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. And just in broad terms, 2017 legislation established a process to review the more than 500 exemptions from required public records disclosure that exist in Oregon law right now. To that end, the legislation created a Sunshine Committee and directed that committee to do initial review and report to the Public Records Subcommittee of the Legislative Council Committee. The Sunshine Committee has done that, and this is going to be a long process. This initial report is simply a schedule of when the Sunshine Committee anticipates reviewing particular types of exemption. And that is contained in the report. By statute, that's required to be submitted to the Public Records Subcommittee. The Public Records Subcommittee heard that report on Monday. They're authorized to make modifications. They chose not to do so. And also by statute, the subcommittee then delivers the report to you, and that is why this is on this agenda. You are free to make modifications to the report, but you otherwise need not take any action. And as I said, the report is very preliminary in a long process. It's simply a schedule of when the Sunshine Committee anticipates reviewing exemptions.
All right, discussion. Senator Boquist?
Well, Mr. President, being a member of the fine subcommittee, I would just recommend that we accept the report to the co-chairs. We accept a report. It is a process, a good process in work right now. And as fine counsel has pointed out, it's simply the first step as we go forward.
Okay. Further discussion, comments?
Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes, Senator Jenny Burdick, please.
At what point do you expect to have recommendations on what if any exemption should be revisited or removed?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Burdick, I anticipate the next report under law is required to be presented in September of the even-numbered year, so September of 2020.
And you expect to have some concrete recommendations on exemptions that may not be appropriate at that time?
Senator Burdick, I actually think Senator Boquist, as a member, would be have a better sense of how the committee is progressing.
It is a work in progress, and I think that as we move even into the next session, that there will be items that float to the top that become more pressing than others. But this is a huge combined effort. That's why we call it the Sunshine Committee. And so they have, a lot of discussions, I think, with 500 some odd pieces of this. And everybody has a vested interest, and amazing enough, a special interest comes out of nowhere with this. This is really just the schedule of going forward. And they've been, if you have any really specific questions, the committee staff is here that's, serviced it, but that's sort of where we are.
And a follow-up, if I could. Is it, you're going to be analyzing the exemptions, but are you also going to be considering new areas that you want to add exemptions for, or is that outside the scope?
No, I don't believe that is not outside the scope.
Good. Thank you.
Further discussion? So no action is needed to be taken, but in deference to Senator Boquist's comment, I'm going to make a statement on the record that this is... committee has received the 2018 report of the Oregon Sunshine Committee as of this date. All right. We'll now go to item number two, the review and consideration, considered adoption of policies. to implement the 2017 public records legislation. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you all of you may recall, the Legislative Council Committee met in January and adopted two policies to implement 2017 public records legislation concerning how the legislative branch responds to public records requests. And at that time, there was also conceptual discussion of these four policies before you today. And since then, the Public Records Subcommittee has met twice to review these policies, and they last met on Monday and reviewed and recommended to you that they be adopted. So with that background, may I turn to specific policies?
Please do.
All right, then. The first one is policy 142. -111, and that is in response to the 2017 legislation directed the Office of Legislative Counsel to prepare open government impact statements. When a proposed legislation modifies the standards by which public records are disclosed or creates a new exemption, something like that. And it also said in the 2017 legislation that an open government impact statement should note whether the proposed legislation is in conformance with drafting standards that apply to public records exemptions. And at that time, we didn't actually have drafting standards. This policy 111 sets forth those standards, and I'm not going to go into them in detail. You can see the standards there in items 1 through 4. I would like to highlight, however, that any legislator can, of course, request legislation that does anything, and this policy would only mandate that it be noted on the open government impact statement if a particular measure was drafted out of conformance with these standards.
Discussion of 142-11 as presented. Representative McLean, please.
Dexter, thank you. Your last sentence, could you repeat your last paragraph with regards to, well, let me ask in the form of a question. Did you just say that if for an example, I asked Legislative Council to draft something, a bill, and I wanted it done in a certain way, and it was in nonconformance to 142-111, you would note that on the draft of the bill, the you would see the noncompliance?
Mr. Chair, Representative McLean, no, it would not be noted on the bill. It would be noted on the open government impact statement that is prepared after the bill is introduced. The policy notes that Legislative Council will strive to discuss with a legislator if their request is going to result in nonconformance with those standards. But this is not on the bill, it's only on the open government impact statement, and that is does not appear on OLIS until the bill is introduced.
Follow up.
Representative McLean, please.
Thank you. I think that, so the impact statement would have nothing to do, for an example, with the relating to clause of some LC draft.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative McLean, that's correct. The open government impact statement is much like a revenue impact statement or fiscal impact statement. It's a separate document and is not legislation. It's not ever going to be a law. It just informs on what the effect of the measure is.
And then follow up would be,
sure.
And then who, that's comforting. Good. Who gets to decide whether something has a positive impact or a negative impact on public disclosure or open government?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative McLean, that would be the public records attorney that Legislative Council hired to prepare these statements and also to assist in public records requests.
Okay, may I follow up then? And that public records attorney is hired by whom?
That is a member of Legislative Council. It's Cameron Miles is sitting right here.
Okay, so that person can be fired by you?
That's correct.
Okay. How does a legislator appeal a ruling by Legislative Council that what they're doing is increasing openness in government or decreasing openness in government?
The legislation, Mr. Chair and Representative McLean, the legislation does not contemplate an appeal of that process. It simply directs that Legislative Council prepare open government impact statements. We certainly would consider any, if any legislator would be free, of course, to say that he or she thinks we're wrong, and we would certainly consider that.
All right, well, Mr. Chair, you know, I'm glad to see we have this process. I'm troubled. I don't think we're there yet with this, because I have seen legislation be given a revenue impact statement or a fiscal impact statement with the ability of presiding officers to influence that. And as a result, legislation has been thwarted in the politicized open government arena. I worry that that partisan influence would continue. And certainly open government is a hot button in the gubernatorial race. And I'm a little concerned that suddenly you could have a member of a minority party introducing legislation that would be perhaps leveling the playing field, and the majority party could exercise influence over Legislative Council's decision and get that deemed to be limiting open government rather than enhancing it. And now everyone, no offense, sir, no offense, but it has been my experience since 2011 that fiscal impact and revenue impact statements haven't been necessarily above board in every single instance. And suddenly we have something as political as this and presiding officers exercising influence on Legislative Council. And I get concerned that when a minority party member seeks to increase open government, but it may have an impact on the majority party, that this process may not be as receptive to minority party members. So I'm raising that concern. I'm not saying today I have a great answer, but it's a concern from a perspective of a member of the minority. And I bet you it's not shared by a member of the majority. And who would think of that, huh?
Representative Vile, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. The concerns expressed by Leader McLean are some that I do share. I may have articulated them a little bit differently, but I think they're legitimate. I have a suggestion that if we were to change the language of the policy slightly so that we are not saying that the non-conformance will be noted, that instead we were to phrase it in that there is a disagreement about whether or not this satisfies the 2017 policy. There's no implication then that a member who has required or pushed Legislative Council to put language in that Legislative Council doesn't feel like complies, that you're not using that kind of a negative phrase of non-conformance. I think if it just simply in the open government impact statement reflected a genuine disagreement, it would be less likely to have the political impact that I think Leader McLean legitimately raises.
Mr. Co-Chair, and I'd like to just point out one thing that to add to this discussion, that the question of whether a legislative council should prepare open government impact statements to that indicate legislative council's opinion on whether a particular measure changes the disclosure of public records or creates an exemption or something like that, that's a matter of statutory law. This policy is simply noting the other thing that the legislature asked legislative council to do, and that was note if the proposed legislation conformed with drafting standards. So the big question about whether there is, this is going to create a new exemption or expand an exemption or contract an exemption, that is a function of statute, not of this policy.
Follow up?
Yes.
Okay. And I recognize that the statute is designed to help us get to a place where we have promoted the maximum amount of disclosure and openness possible. But there remains the fact that we can have legitimate disagreements about whether something does or does not do that. And if we have that disagreement, rather than allowing the system to essentially impugn a member for suggesting a particular policy that legislative council feels like doesn't do it, let's look for a way that we don't cause that politicization of the issue. And I don't think my suggested language is necessarily inconsistent with the statute if it is in the policy that impact statement is a much more neutral observation than the negative implication of you are asking for something that's not legal, which is really what I believe it reads now.
I have to say, I'm a bit confused, and I would probably be benefited by an example, because we're talking drafting standards?
Madam Co-Chair, yes. So let me just quote the statute. I'm going to quote the statute, ORS 192.488 here, that it says, an open government impact statement must state whether the measure conforms to drafting standards. That's what this is. And describe how the measure would alter existing standards regarding the disclosure or exemption from disclosure of public records, and how the measure would impact public interests in disclosure that would be served if the public record were subject to mandatory disclosure. So that's a second element, and it is not affected by this policy.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative,
I beg to differ, counsel. Once you put in the open government impact statement a phrase that says the requester has asked for something that is in nonconformance with our policy, there is a very definite implication in that that I think is unnecessary and inappropriate. And yes, you can say it does not meet legislative council's drafting standards, which, by the way, are not an objective set of standards that can be always agreed on by everybody. I've often disagreed with legislative council about the drafting of a particular provision in law, both before and during my time as a legislator. So that statement I'm not happy with. I recognize it's in law, but I don't think it implies that we have to go the next step in the impact statement and say, essentially, the requesters asked for something that does not conform with open government, essentially. So I do think, I will, Mr. Chair, not be able to vote for this particular policy unless we're able to get some different language reflecting what I've been talking about.
Senator Boquist, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got about a few minutes here. But in light of the absence of Senator Brzezinski or the other co-chair, Representative Wilson, of the subcommittee, frankly, we didn't vet this issue. I mean, it was not a, we approached it purely as a technical issue. I clearly see the what has been raised by the two representatives. I'm fine with the subcommittee taking it back and going back. We simply didn't. We didn't, it's an issue that didn't come up. I do see the merits on both sides of the arguments, but it's not a debate that we had in the subcommittee. So the subcommittee is at a loss at this point to explain to you why we didn't do it.
Further discussion?
No.
Yes.
Thank you. It's really a question, I think. I heard the description of the statute, .488. Does that statute suggest that openness is always the most important value?
Thank you.
That's its objective.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, the statute doesn't state that. Whether it suggests that would be a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Next item.
Why don't think we have to do anything?
Yeah, you don't have to.
No.
All right. I would like now to move on to 142112, I believe, which is the next policy. Is that correct? Did I name it right? 112?
112.
Yeah, great.
Mr. Chair, this policy concerns fees, and it establishes, it's needed because the current process is quite a cumbersome one for computing the fees that may be charged when a records requester seeks records. The law allows the public body to recoup its expenses, and the current process involves legislative council identifying who in the legislative branch is going to be gathering these records, inspecting the records, and actually computing their hourly salary wage and the amount of time. It's a very cumbersome process. This policy adopts a flat fee schedule that you see in the third paragraph, basically for administrative work. It's a $25 per hour rate for more complicated work involving knowledge of the legislative process. It is a $40 rate, and then for professional level legal or IT work, it is $75 per hour rate. Much more streamlined process for computing the estimates that are required, and this is needed because of the 2017 legislation really sped up the time frames for responding to record requests. The policy also has a fee reduction standard that would, if there is a public interest involved, would apply a 40% reduction in the fee that would be charged. And then if there is a comprehensive public interest test that is satisfied. That is to say, the request is very narrowly tailored, and is being made by a requester who is not making the request for either commercial or opposition research purposes, then the fee is waived entirely. And that is policy 142112.
Discussion. Could I have, President Bao.
Do you, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you sense that there's likely to be any concern about what it may or may not be in the public interest? Is that a subjective term that might get us in trouble here?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Vile, the public interest test is in existing public records law and has been there for many years. So I think there's developed standards on what is meant.
Thanks.
Thank you. Speaker Kotick.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move to adopt proposed policy 142-112 dated, is it dated today?
September 24th.
Dated 9/24/18.
Discussed in the motion. Objections to the motion. Motion has been adopted. Policy 142-113.
Mr. Co-Chair, policy 142-113, again, is driven by the accelerated timeframes for responding to public records requests that was made in the 2017 legislation. And it deals with the situation where a request is made that affects multiple either legislators or legislative offices during session, where the Legislative Assembly and its committees, members and employees have available the in-session exemption that simply essentially can exempt the legislative branch from the public records process. Many legislators choose not to exercise that when they receive requests. But this policy is designed to address the situation. The public has been concerned about how long it has taken to respond to public records requests made of the legislative branch during session. And the reason is because legislative counsel attempts to confirm with each target office, do they want to claim the exemption or not? And that often is, there's a big lag in communication between when we get a confirmation of that or not. And so what this policy does is to establish a 24-hour period once we have informed the target office. And this, again, this is with when there are multiple target offices that a request has been made. There's a 24-hour time frame to waive the exemption. Otherwise, the exemption will be claimed. Mm-hmm. And now, that can be backed off later, but this is a way to move forward in a prompt manner. And so that is policy 142-113.
And this came out of this Floyd subcommittee?
Mr. Chair, yes. It was presented to them twice.
All right. Discussion. All right. Co-Chair, Speaker Kotick.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move to adopt proposed policy 142-113, dated 9/24/18.
There's a motion before you. Discussion. Can I get clarification? So I get clobbered with these like that. I get requests all the time in my office. So they come in. I got 24 hours to say whether I'm going to take the exemption. Did you just say that to me?
Mr. Co-Chair, I said that, no, I did not say that.
What did you say?
What I said was that legislative counsel would proceed on the assumption that you were going to claim the exemption, but that we would, if we heard direction from you to the contrary even later, that you could, in fact, waive the exemption.
Okay, so it automatically goes in, all right. But I could also come back and say, all right, the heck with it, I'm going to go with it and grant them the request, right?
Mr. Co-Chair, yes, that is absolutely correct.
I feel much better. I thought you said something else. I was getting scared then.
Well, because the goal is that, you know, in the hectic of set, that there is a response. Yeah. Right. That could be changed at some point, but there's a pro forma response that said, that would say during session, unless somebody wanted to change their mind afterwards. But
yes, Madam Co-Chair, that is absolutely correct. So, and the problem here is because the 2017 legislation established very prompt 5-day and 15-day deadlines, and yes, they can be extended, but that is the, that is the norm now.
Okay. All right, thank you. All right, there's any discussion, any objection to the adoption of 142-113? Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Just one thing that I think for clarity. We have such a turnover among legislators that just as we do briefings on sexual harassment, how much of this should we let other legislators know that this particular policy and responsibility as a part of just normal briefing?
My expectation, Senator Winters, and I speak for both of us, I assume we will get an updated, this will all be included in the annual training, because
I would hope so.
There's some significant changes. I think this clarification also has to be communicated to members, like this is now the protocol. So yes, in January when we all.
And I want to add, the training is going to dramatically change for us, and we'll be in smaller groups. And therefore, I would hope that these kind of things, even though it's a training, we always think of as the harassment training, but to the extent, this kind of stuff we really need to know about, and you come in there with bullhorns, not to be melodramatic. So I also, just for the record, we're going to be in much smaller groups for a lot of reasons, and I just hope, that's very important. You got to let us know this stuff. And if we're not listening, you get us to listen in ways that you choose. I don't know what I meant by that, but it's important that we do that. All right. Would you take up 142-114, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So 142-114 is a similar concept, although it applies both during session and interim. And that is, again, driven by the heightened time frame, and addresses the particular situation, again, where there is a request made, legislative council has gathered the records, and we strive to ensure that the target office always gets a chance to review records before they are disclosed publicly. What has happened is that we send the gathered records to the target office, and then nothing happens, and a long period of time goes by. And so this policy, again, it establishes essentially a default position that can be modified subsequently. But when there are records that are required to be disclosed, and those that are eligible for exemption, for which you may or may not want to claim the exemption, Legislative Council will send the records to the target office, wait for 3 days, and then claim all available exemptions and disclose the other records. Again, if we hear from a member that they want to disclose the otherwise exempt records anyways, we will do that, including after the 3-day period. But this is just a process to move forward so that the 15-day normal time frame is capable of being complied with.
All right. Yes, Representative Isle, please.
So is the objective here to, when you use the 3 days, I assume that you're trying to get within that 15-day time frame, unless you have a waiver or an exemption that allows you to extend it. Couldn't we tie it to the end of that 15-day time frame? So in other words, if you sent me a set of documents over, and it's really 6 days until your deadline, is there any reason I couldn't have 6 days? Because 3 days is gonna be short. I've been through this process in a number of circumstances, and it's gonna be short sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Vile, the situation typically is that we're right up at the 15-day deadline anyways. There certainly would be no problem with that. And I should also stress the deadline is something that can and would, by legislative council, be extended if we're anywhere near that. This is just a way to move forward, deliver records. Again, we strive to ensure that you review fully disclosable record so that there's no surprises. But when we find we're often in a situation where we don't hear one way or the other, this allows us to move forward.
So it'd be a complete non-response that would trigger the default of you're going to go ahead and let them go.
At least for the fully disclosable pieces.
Correct.
Yeah, the yes. One's not subject to an exemption. Okay.
And if the fully disclosables, they wouldn't be disclosed, right? If I don't say anything, you're going to disclose them? Is that what this is?
Mr. Co-Chair, that is correct.
You got 3 days to make that, my office got 3 days to make that decision? And I'm assuming they're worked, I mean, what do we, I'm just curious.
I think it's 3 days to decide on the other section of things that could be exemptable.
That's not what he,
no.
I thought that's what I understood, but that's not what he did. He now said something much different to me. I thought the only thing I'm dealing with here is the exemption. If I'm dealing with things that I've got to get out there, and you're sending them up to my office, and I want to have a chance to look at them, and I've only got 3 days, that's very interesting. That's
Mr.
All
President, I think you just have to say something within 3 days.
I understand, Representative Vile, but there's offices and there's offices. And, well, I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I'm trying to be very realistic. I already am worried about the 24-hour thing I just said yes to, except I think there is, I can't lose. I can't get in trouble there in terms of information getting out that I wouldn't want out. You just tell them no, because you haven't heard from me in the 24 hours. That's how I interpret that 24 hours, right?
Mr. Co-Chair, that's correct, but I also want to mention that Representative Vile is correct. We only need word, and I also will note that this is actually a discretionary.
What does that mean?
I'll just quote from the policy that if Legislative Council has not received a response from the public body within 3 business days, Legislative Council may, at its discretion, claim all potential exemptions and release the responsive records to the requester that are otherwise required to be disclosed.
Yes, Representative.
Dexter, if I had on my calendar a appointment at 2:30 on May 1st, hypothetically speaking, that said, call your cousin Bernice and wish her happy May Day. Her cell phone number is blah, blah, blah. Because that is not related to my legislative duties, but it's maybe, let's say, all of this is hypothetical, of course, but let's say in my family, May Day is really big to my cousin Bernice, and so we all call her and wish her well. That's kind of what we do. And so that would be non-disclosable on my calendar, is my understanding, because it may be on my calendar, but I'm allowed to put some personal things on my calendar during a public records request. If it's call your mom, call cousin Bernice, it gets blacked out. Is that correct?
Representative McClain, that is correct.
Okay, so if Representative Barnhart makes a public records request to me to see if I properly celebrated May Day, and I'm disclosing my May Day calendar, do I have 3 days, 72 hours to tell you, hey, we need to black out Bernice because it contains her personal cell phone number that's not legislatively related. She's my 7th cousin, and that's kind of what we do in the McLean household.
Representative McLean, no. The policy directs us to claim all available exemptions. This calendar entry actually is not a public record because it's not doesn't reflect conduct of the public's business, so it wouldn't need to be disclosed.
But do I have 3 days to communicate that to you? Because unless you know who Bernice is, you don't know if Bernice is a constituent, and I was supposed to call her about the barking dog in Prineville, or Bernice was my cousin who celebrates May Day. Don't I have to communicate? And my only concern is if I only have 3-day window to let you know that that is information that should be applied as personal, like a cell phone number or something, then that's a tight timeframe for those of us, especially those of us who live east of the mountains and often don't tackle these things until we get back in the office and are able to sit down and crank them out. I'm just flagging that. I mean, I know the Bernice thing is silly, but it kind of illustrates the point that unless I communicate with you, you don't know who Bernice is.
Mr. Kocher, Representative McLean, that's correct, but the policy, first of all, is discretionary, and it directs us to claim all available exemptions. The way I would approach that is to err on the side of caution and would not disclose that because it would, at a minimum, be unclear. It seems to me that this would be exempt in almost any circumstances, but it would be unclear as to whether that was a public record or not.
Then the follow-up final thing would be, so this policy 142-114, as applied, Dexter, you're representing that if it's not explicitly clear that it does not meet an exemption, then you exempt it until we have time to look at it and approve. If it's clear that it is disclosable, like for an example, you know, meeting with Speaker Kotek to discuss, you know, majority party stepping all over minority party or something like that.
Just a quick example.
Just a quick example of none of our many meetings. Something like that. If that says meeting with in Speaker's office with Rep. Kotek, that's clearly legislative business. You don't have to think about that much, and you go, yeah, that's disclosable. But if it's something else and you're not sure, is that what I'm hearing?
Representative McLean, yes, that's correct.
All right, in that regard, then this policy does move stuff along instead of a legislator being out of the country during the interim and not being able to get back to you.
That is, Representative McLean, that's what the policy is designed to address.
Okay.
Because we're trying to meet that 15-day standard.
Correct.
In some form or fashion.
Correct, right. Yes.
Okay.
All right.
So you guys are okay with this?
I think so. As you know, I think so. Based on that explanation,
and I will say why, because I think the balance is, you know, trying to meet the intent of the 15-day. I think we have committed to making sure when someone makes a request that we have a timely response. It might not be complete because there might be information that has to be reviewed some more. But at least if something can be put out by that date, I think that is the goal here. And giving guidance to the Legislative Council, when we're not around and not knowing what to do, have some consistency in the policy. So that's my understanding of it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Co-chair.
Mr. Chair, the only problem with the policy is that I don't get Cousin Bernice's phone number.
That's true. That's true. He does not get it.
Yeah, but you see, you're assuming, you're just thinking about the exemptions. I'm not thinking about that. They're making decisions what's got to go out.
Right.
And I haven't heard, and they're saying it. Because maybe I'm screwing up. That is what's got me worried. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm asking you to indulge me. I want to take this back to my staff and make sure that 3 days, you know, I should have read it more. I agree with all that. But I want to make sure I know what I'm doing here and not shortchanging me by it. Maybe it should be a week or something. Because all of us live in worlds where, you know, we don't get messages, we don't get things. And even though maybe we would have gone along, I want to make sure we've got a check and balance in our own offices and our own staff. So I'm asking you, let me do that, because I am not there yet. I'm just, my tummy isn't there, and I won't know, because I just can't. Got to be up front with you. Something's wrong.
It could be 5 days.
It could be very fine. Maybe within 1 second I hear talk, but I'm not going to waste the committee's time. I'm not there. Something's not right in my own mind. That could be my slowness or my inability to sort things out. But I want my chief of staff and the people who work with this, because when these things come in, I don't know about your offices.
We do get a lot of
when they come in, my staff starts going, it goes nuts in there more than even me. And they're making decisions on my behalf and others. They have to work with you. This isn't a criticism of you. I want to make sure that the whole team understands it and says, Peter, yeah, maybe it should be a week, 7 days. I don't know. And I get the 15. That's all. Yes?
Let me ask counsel. Is there ever a situation in which, whether something is mandatory disclosable, is questionable? Whether you have to make a judgment call, or is it always so clear that it's completely obvious?
Representative Barnhart, no, it's very common, actually, that there be a judgment call, and that is something that we do in coordination with you, if you're the target office.
So, if I could follow up, I think what you're saying is, if it's a judgment call, you're not going to release initially, if you don't hear from a member in 3 days, until you've had a chance to discuss with the member which side of that judgment ought to prevail. Have I understood that correctly?
Representative Barnhart, yes, you have.
No, that's not what you said. You said you would send out, you would exempt for sure what you had exemption on, and the other things would go out. Now, you made that statement earlier in this discussion. I don't mean to start challenging you here, but that statement was made. You know, I don't want to prolong this. I really don't want to do this. It's not fair to you. And again, it's really not fair to you in a lot of ways, because your offices don't, maybe you do. You get inundated these things, et cetera, right? I mean, they really come. And well, but I'm just asking you, I'm saying I'm not ready to vote on this. I'm going to exercise the chair, the authority of the chair, say I'm not ready to vote on this today. And so that's what I want to do. And I hate to be that arbitrary. And I'm fully willing to blame myself for not totally familiarizing myself before I came in here today. So if you want to criticize me, criticize me. But I'm not ready to vote on this thing.
Well, and Mr. Kircher, I am fine with that. We have to come back on 111. I think it provides uncertainty for legislative council between now and December, but I think that's probably manageable. I do think on, particularly on one, well, both of these, we should go back on 111, look at that language again and make sure it addresses your concerns. Look at 114, think of all the situations we've had in our offices. Does that make sense? Maybe we need to have it, you know, graphed out. If no, yes, we do, you know, what's the flow chart? But we do need to have this clarified in December as we go into session. I just, you know, legislative council needs to know how to do this. So.
I thank the committee very much for indulging me. I'm sorry, I do. That is the end of the agenda here, right? So is there anything further? With that, I'm going to adjourn the Joint Committee on Legislative Council. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.